This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got lots to talk about today. You can call us. We invite you to come directly into the doctor's office with your questions about medicine, nutrition, and overall health. Natural medicine is a focus on Intelligent Medicine. It's 877-726-8255. That's 877-726-TALK for those of you who want to pose a question. And we got lots of stories to share with you today, among which we're going to talk about an interesting story that suggests that vegans beware, because avoiding meat during pregnancy is linked with later substance abuse by the offspring, the kids who are born to moms who are vegans. And before we get to that story, before we get to your phone calls, of course, the big elephant in the room this week is the mystery surrounding Stephen Paddock, who killed at least 58 people and wounded hundreds more in Las Vegas last Sunday with a vast collection, an arsenal of high-powered rifles. And to this point, we still don't understand precisely what motivated him to undertake this terrible act of violence. Now, speculation is rife on his motivations, and I hate when people appropriate an event like this to their particular agenda, whether it be the agenda that he was targeting right-wing Trump supporters, and that this was the act of a deranged left-wing attacker. Well, it could be, but so far that corroboration of that viewpoint has not emerged. All the people who are calling for gun legislation, or people who are contrarians who are saying, had more people in the audience been armed, perhaps we could have protected the victims from further harm. There's all kinds of controversies swirling around this, and among them is the contention that it was psychiatric medication that made Stephen Paddock do it. And again, this is an agenda. There's some people who are inalterably opposed to the use of psychiatric medication. I'm not among them, although I think far too many people are prescribed willy-nilly psychiatric drugs. A very high percentage of Americans take antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs. They create dependency. They create a lot of side effects. If we treated psychiatric problems using more natural approaches, a very high percentage of people would not need medication. And that's a continual theme here on Intelligent Medicine, is natural ways to treat mood disorders, and there are many. But we have to look at the evidence, because there is such a thing as a paradoxical reaction to a psychiatric med. And records from the Nevada Prescription Monitoring Program obtained this week show that Paddock was prescribed 50 10-milligram diazepam tablets, better known as Valium, by a Henderson, Nevada physician. And that suggests that he may or may not have been under the influence of Valium when he committed these acts. Now, it is a known fact, and I've done some research on this during the week, that some people have what are called paradoxical reactions to drugs. Generally, when you take Valium, you chill out, you relax, you become more docile. But it is known that some people have what's called a paradoxical or backwards reaction to these types of medications. And technically what this is called is disinhibition. Disinhibition means that the part of your brain that's supposed to be the site of your conscience and the site of judgment and the site of, let's put the brakes on here before we accede to our impulses, that this part of the brain gets blunted by these drugs. So they say here in an article about this, it's called benzodiazepines and disinhibition. Benzodiazepines, the category of drug to which Valium belongs. Some psychiatric disorders are associated with pathological anger and aggression. These include psychotic disorders, depression, bipolar disorders, and various personality disorders. And what you can see is a paradoxical increase in hostility and aggression after the administration of benzodiazepines. This according to an article in a psychiatric journal. And, you know, it's just like alcohol. Some people are sort of amiable drunks. They become, you know, sort of relaxed and amusing and quiet. And other people become violent and aggressive. And it all kind of depends on your underlying personality. In the majority of participants, they say benzodiazepines have a calming effect, but in a minority, they can cause paradoxical reactions, also called disinhibitory reactions, characterized by acute excitement and an altered mental state, increased anxiety, vivid dreams, hyperactivity, sexual disinhibition, hostility, and rage. And indeed, hints of this were obtained from the partner, the lady who got picked up in, I guess it was in the Philippines or in Japan, they shipped her back here for questioning, who'd hung out with Paddock. And she said that he was prone to terrible nightmares. He would moan and scream in his sleep. And, you know, you could easily say that drugs caused some of the shootings that have occurred over the past few years. There's a strong concordance between acts of violence and being on psychiatric drugs, but is it the drugs or is it just that these people have mental disorders and people with mental disorders tend to be on drugs? But what they found is that if you gave a typical benzodiazepine, in this case it's Ativan, to normal patients, about 14% of them had these paradoxical reactions. But if you gave them to people who have an underlying condition, in this case borderline personality disorder, the rate goes way up. 58% experienced paradoxical reactions. And so they say that benzos cause a decrease in the restraining influence of the cortex. That's the frontal brain. That's the part of the brain that exercises judgment, leading to excitement, anxiety, hostility, and rage. Back in 1998, a study showed that healthy volunteers who'd taken 10 milligrams of Valium were more likely to behave aggressively under low levels of provocation than without. In a population of young violent offenders, already they've got aggressive tendencies. Benzodiazepines led to self-reported feelings of power, overwhelming self-esteem, and increased suggestibility. Now, another possibility I'm going to throw out here is that there's a type of degenerative brain disorder, usually develops later in life, and people past the age of 60 or so, and this guy was 62. It's called frontotemporal dementia, and it's relatively uncommon, but what is involved here is a change in personality. And when you have this, it's characterized by lack of insight. You don't know you have this, whereas some people with memory problems, they're acutely aware that they have memory problems. But this doesn't affect the memory center of the brain. This affects the frontotemporal cortex, which is the judgment part of the brain. And lack of insight and gradual onset of disease are the hallmarks of frontotemporal dementia, and you get behavioral disinhibition, just like with Valium. Within several years of symptoms, patients can behave contrary to social norms. That's quite an understatement when it comes to this guy, Paddock. Contrary to social norms, he violated virtually every social norm known to civilization since the beginning of time by killing 58 people with automatic weapons. Disinhibition may also be exhibited in the form of rash and impulsive actions like gambling or repeatedly falling for financial scams. We know that Paddock was a gambler, but was he impulsive? He seemed to be actually highly deliberative in the way that he approached his killing spree, staking out many venues and laboriously putting together an arsenal and bringing weapons bag by bag in a very methodical way to his hotel room. It says that patients may lose sympathy or empathy. That is a cardinal feature of someone who undertakes a killing spree, because without sympathy or empathy, the people in your gun sights are just targets. They're not really people. You don't empathize with them as they scream in pain and drop to the pavement. Patients can lose the ability to respond to the emotional expressions and needs of others and be distant, cold, and indifferent. They can be less socially engaged and fail to exhibit personal warmth, even with family and friends. So, you know, multiple theories. The problem is this guy blew his brains out with a shotgun. Will it be possible to undertake a brain autopsy to see if this guy was suffering from a brain disorder? Certainly toxicological reports will be due in probably within a couple of weeks, and we can determine if Paddock was on medication, and if medication may have played a role in his killing spree. But multiple theories abound. We can't really say for sure, but there are some distinct possibilities. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We welcome your phone calls, 877-726-8255 for Intelligent Medicine. You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Take advantage of everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer. Just go to drhoffman.com. There you'll find cutting-edge articles and resources vital to your health and wellness. Subscribe to the podcast and newsletter to keep Intelligent Medicine content flowing all week long. Also, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients. Finally, become a patient of my practice. I will personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all of our intelligent medicine principles, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist. She'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Get the Intelligent Medicine experience. Go to drhoffman.com. drhoffman.com. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman for Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA, and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. They source only the highest quality, deep, cold water fish using traditional, sustainable methods. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and 28 of their fish oils have received the highest 5-star rating from the International Fish Oil Standards Program. Carlson is the number one selling liquid fish oil brand in the United States. Carlson's award-winning omega-3 nutritional supplements are available in soft gels and liquid form for those who have trouble swallowing supplements or who prefer this delivery method. For more information, go to CarlsonLabs.com. CarlsonLabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and we're taking your phone calls, 877-726-8255 for questions. And we got a call from Los Angeles, California, my hometown, from Kelly. How you doing, Kelly?
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, what part of L.A. are you from?
Santa Monica.
That's where I grew up, Santa Monica. That's my old stomping grounds. Yeah, and then I moved east to go to college, and the rest is history. I stayed here on the East Coast, but
So how are things in Santa
Monica?
Beautiful
place to grow up.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's gorgeous here. I can't complain.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, first of all, I want to compliment you. I want to compliment you and Layla for what you do and how you empower us to learn about and be advocates for our health, because I don't think all doctors do that for us. So thank you for doing what you do.
Well, that's great. You're referring to our weekly podcast, including our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer questions. And you can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and there we'll answer your questions during one of our podcasts. Go ahead.
So my question to you is, so I was diagnosed with herpes 2 a couple of years ago, and I had a really first bad episode, and then it's been under control. You know, it's not been, I just know to avoid certain foods.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So the other day I decided to be good to my body and have some bone broth that had collagen in it, and it just triggered. And I went online and realized that, boom, collagen is not good for that. So
yeah, I'm not sure. It's interesting that you say collagen is not good for that. Is collagen particularly high in arginine? Is that the problem? Okay. Yeah. So, you know, we tend to tell people with frequent herpes outbreaks from a dietary standpoint to reduce their arginine and increase their lysine. And I guess I didn't realize this, but yeah, bone broth is such a healthy thing. Maybe
I know.
High in that amino acid. So that's too bad. Yeah.
I know. So I was calling because I'm 46 years old. I'm starting to see like my skin change, and I was wondering, is there anything else that I could take that would not trigger?
Yeah, I will tell you something. You know, first of all, lifestyle is important, and I'm sure you're out there in California and you're following a healthy lifestyle and you listen to this program, so you're doing a lot of the right things. You're getting adequate sleep. You're not smoking. You're not eating a lot of sugar, which causes glycation, which is the cross-linking of proteins causing wrinkles. You're avoiding that stuff and probably taking antioxidant supplements and things like that, and lots of omega-3 fatty acids, which reduce inflammation, and curcumin, which reduces inflammation. All these are good for the skin. But in particular, I think one of the benefits of glucosamine with chondroitin, you know, we know it's helpful for the joints, but hey, it supports collagen. And, you know, glucosamine and chondroitin are such small molecules that they don't contain added arginine. So I might suggest that you, I think it's for cosmetic purposes, for skin protection purposes, but also just for overall joint protection, because as you age, you know, we start being more susceptible to osteoarthritis and loss of the cushioning between our joints. Take ample amounts of glucosamine with chondroitin. I think that that's been a beneficial side effect of all the glucosamine and chondroitin I've taken, is that I look relatively young for my age. MSM also has nice effects on reducing cross-linking in the skin. So you might take that as well. And again, no problem vis-a-vis herpes. Hey, thanks very much for your call, and say hi to my buds out there in Santa Monica. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Prevent those frustrating seasonal symptoms, including sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes, that can spoil your time outdoors by supercharging your immune response right at the source, your digestive tract, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. If your immune system views pollen, animal dander, or wheat as a dangerous invader, it will react by stimulating an inflammatory response and incite all those unpleasant symptoms. What you may not know is that the immune receptor cells residing in your gut all depend on a healthy probiotic population to function at their peak. That's why Dr. Fred Pescatore, a best-selling author on the subject, recommends Dr. O'Hara's probiotics as a top-tier defense in the management of seasonal symptoms. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics delivers live, beneficial bacteria in an easily absorbed formula and is backed by over 25 years of research. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference and enjoy the outdoors again.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. In just a moment, we'll return to our phone calls, 877-726-8255, for questions related to medicine, nutrition, health. Avoiding meat during pregnancy is linked with later substance misuse by children. Okay, well, they surveyed over 5,000 women and their offspring, and what they found was that women who attempted to curtail their intake of animal protein, i.e. red meat, poultry, and meat products during pregnancy, had a greater risk of giving birth to a child with adverse alcohol, pot, or cigarette use. That's kind of interesting. And what could possibly cause that? Well, you might say iron deficiency, not so much. But apparently lower meat consumption may disproportionately increase the risk of offspring substance misuse because of a relative deficiency in vitamin B12. And B12 insufficiencies may have had a contributing role in the study's findings. So the suggestion is that perhaps, say you're a vegetarian or vegan mom, that could work for you if you take appropriate supplementation. Now, another supplement that I would point, it's not in this article, but another supplement that I would point out would be helpful in pregnancy for women who are vegans who don't eat fish would be omega-3 fatty acids, because they're very important for brain development in the fetus and in early infant and child development. And they can have an effect on mood. They have antidepressant effects. They may play a role in the development of normal IQ. And therefore, if you're going to go the vegan route, which is more challenging, definitely consider supplementation if you're going to be undertaking pregnancy. All right, let's take some calls. Let's talk to Lorraine in Waldrick, New Jersey. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I'm so happy to be speaking with you. I've listened to you for many years, and
thank you.
You do wonderful things.
Can you turn down your radio in the background? We get a little bit of an echo going on.
I don't have a radio on in the background.
Oh, okay. Well, there's an echo then in our studio.
When I called in before, I heard it there on your end as well. So
okay.
But anyway, I had a blood test a while ago that showed that I had high aldosterone. And because I had my blood pressure also went high. So they did a blood test. They found I had hyperaldosteronism.
By the way, you're not taking a lot of licorice, are you?
No, not at all.
Because that's one of the things that creates what's called pseudoaldosteronism, which can cause sodium retention and potassium loss. Do you have a high sodium or low potassium?
No, not now. No. I had all blood work, and they said everything's fine. They put me on a mild spironolactone, which is very mild.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 25 milligrams, and they've done blood work since, and they said that I really don't have to watch my potassium because with this low dose, it should never become an imbalance between my sodium and potassium.
Okay, good. And is your blood pressure okay? Your blood pressure is normal?
Now it came down. Yeah, the cardiologist actually put me on something called Bistolic, which was doing nothing. So I went to an endocrinologist, and she's the one that found all this.
They figured it out. And, you know, it's interesting about spironolactone. Spironolactone is also used for women who have acne or who have excess facial or body hair. It actually has that. I mean, that may be a side benefit to you, that it may improve the condition of your skin or reduce unsightly hair.
Right. She did mention that, but then I don't have those issues, so that's a good thing.
Okay.
So she had me have a CAT scan just to make sure that there was no anything on the adrenal glands, or she just wanted to see those. So they were fine.
Right.
But
then,
of course, when they did that, they do the whole abdominal system. So then they found that my bile ducts on my gallbladder were dilated.
Yeah.
So now they want me to have an MRI. She had me see a gastro doctor, and so now he wants me to do that. But
one thing leads to another. You know, they're looking for
right,
one thing,
and that's
they find
what I said. I didn't want to open this can of worms.
Yeah.
So the doctor said that they could have been like this for 20 years, but maybe you have a tiny stone. So he wants me to have an MRI now, and I am very claustrophobic. I can't do MRIs.
Yeah.
But then they said do it with anesthesia. So now that this creates a complication, because then it creates blood work. Is this something that's really necessary? I'm having no other symptoms.
Yeah, this is the kind of dilemma that I face a lot in my daily practice. I'm sort of the Supreme Court, the court of last resort for patients who are told they need this or that, an operation, procedure, test, or medication. And, you know, in this case, I mean, we do see some slight glitch on your MRI, I mean, or CAT scan, I believe you said it was. And, you know, it that could be indicative of a problem. But, you know, worst come to worst, you may have gallstones, which approximately 20% of the population have and go harmlessly to their grave with the gallstones without any consequences, without any attacks. And so I'm not sure. I'm not going to render a medical opinion here because I think that would be inappropriate in about a two-minute consultation without reviewing your records. But I you know, just as an example of generically, you're looking for one thing, another, you know, the more imaging you do, the more anomalies, abnormalities you find, and you end up chasing your tail with more tests, running up medical expenses, subjecting yourself to risks and radiation. And in your case, you got a pretty, I mean, it'd be one thing if it were routine to undergo an MRI, but for you, you have claustrophobia. You may perhaps do a stand-up MRI. I don't even know if that's feasible with the part of your anatomy they're trying to visualize. I think this might be a situation where you could just do some watchful waiting, maybe do a right upper quadrant sonogram, which is much easier. It doesn't involve claustrophobia. See if there's stones present, see if it sheds any light on this, dilation of the duct problem. That might be a less invasive, easier way to put your finger on the problem. But, you know, it does illustrate that, you know, it's hey, let's do a whole body scan, see what's going on. No thanks, because it could lead you to a lot of unwarranted worry and unnecessary testing. Thanks for your call. Let's take a call now from Carol, who is in New Jersey. What town are you in, Carol?
Clifton.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hi, doctor. The reason I was calling, I was wondering, is it all right to drink those beet juice drinks when you're on a blood thinner?
Yes, that's an interesting question. Beets do contain vitamin K, but the vast majority of vitamin K is in the leaves of the beets. And I believe that these beet products that are designed to work on nitric oxide, they're dietary nitrates, which actually get converted in the body to nitric oxide, which dilates your blood vessels and may help to drop your blood pressure a point or two, or even, and the prospect is real because that nitric oxide is the Viagra principle, they may improve sexual performance. So, it turns out that the amount of vitamin K in the beets themselves is not enough to cause problems with a blood thinner like warfarin. You're on Coumadin or warfarin?
I'm on Eliquis.
Oh, Eliquis. It won't cause a problem anyway. Yeah. Then it for sure won't cause, because those medications, that category of medication is in no way interfered with vitamin K. So that's not even vitamin K dependent. But let's say, you know, you were on the most commonly prescribed old-fashioned blood thinner, which is Coumadin, you still would be okay because the amount of vitamin K in beets is not enough to cause problems with warfarin or Coumadin, unless you also eat the beet greens, which are high in vitamin K, because eating beet greens can make warfarin or Coumadin less effective. So so there you have it, okay?
Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you. And all right, here's an interesting case of the FDA is cracking down on a bakery in Concord, Massachusetts. Isn't that where it all started? In Lexington and Concord, you know, the the British came to confiscate their weapons in an arsenal there, and that started the whole Revolutionary War. Well, this may start a bit of a Revolutionary War because the federales, the federal government, in the person of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, is cracking down on a small micro bakery in Concord, Massachusetts, called Neshoba Brook Bakery. You probably never heard of it because they just make products for health food stores, probably for local distribution. In a letter posted this week on the FDA website, the agency said that federal regulations require that ingredients must be listed by their common or usual name. Well, the folks at Neshoba Brook Bakery
list love as an ingredient on their Neshoba granola label. And according to the FDA, and they're writing this very seriously on their website, love, in quotations, is not a common or usual name of an ingredient and is considered to be intervening material because it is not part of the common or usual name of the ingredient. So they're cracking down on this bakery. There's some other problems there because in addition to love, there are perhaps some not such happy ingredients in the products made at this bakery. Because listing love as an ingredient was just one of several violations, including a failure by the company to clean and sanitize its baking equipment and facility properly. So you're getting some love when you buy Neshoba granola, but you may be getting some other stuff less desirable. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our number, 877-726-8255 for questions. Keep them coming. This is Intelligent Medicine.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Take advantage of everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer. Just go to drhoffman.com. There you'll find cutting-edge articles and resources vital to your health and wellness. Subscribe to the podcast and newsletter to keep Intelligent Medicine content flowing all week long. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients. Finally, become a patient of my practice. I will personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all of our intelligent medicine principles, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist. She'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Get the intelligent medicine experience. Go to drhoffman.com. drhoffman.com.
Stop breathing right now. No, really, hold your breath. This is how it feels when you're stuffed up due to colds, flu, pollen, dander, post-nasal drip, or any other reason. That's when you need clear saline nasal spray, the only spray with the power of xylitol. That simple saline solution you're using is only doing half the job. It's just rinsing. In multiple research studies, xylitol has been shown to reduce bacterial adhesion and help keep your nose moist and clean much longer than saline alone, making Clear more effective at washing away that nasty gunk in your nose. Clear is so powerful, it's been granted over 11 patents. So step up from that wimpy saline spray to something that actually works faster and better at getting you the relief you need to start breathing now. And if your doctor isn't talking to you about Clear for your congestion, maybe you need to get a new doctor. You don't just rinse your hands, why would you just rinse your nose? Clear saline nasal spray with xylitol. Available at Walmart, CVS, Whole Foods, Rite Aid, and everywhere else. Or clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Now go wash your nose.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman here, and we're getting lots of calls this hour. Things are picking up on our call boards. 877-726-8255 this hour or next. And let's talk now to Jill in Middletown, New Jersey. Hi.
Middletown, New York.
Oh, Middletown, New York. Okay. Yeah, I think there's a Middletown in practically every state.
Yes, there is. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, my sister has chronic UTIs, and she's on a regular diet of D-mannose, colloidal silver, probiotics, cranberry juice, and nothing
she's doing
seems
it all.
To help.
Yeah, doing it all. Yeah.
And she ends up on a diet of, antibiotics, and which is...
Well, you know, you just ran through the repertoire of things that help, and often these things make a huge difference. And, you know, that's the problem is that I've got such an educated audience out there that sometimes people say, well, I've tried everything under the sun and now tell me what I can try. And in this case, you know, there may be just some underlying susceptibility, some kind of immune problem, or there may be some physical anomaly of the kidneys where there are pockets that are just very vulnerable to infection, or some place in the bladder that's just very susceptible. And I just am not sure what else to tell you. I mean, we would want to look at whether she's taking appropriate doses. Sometimes people take, you know, one or two cranberry pills a day or one or two mannose pills per day. I prefer to dose mannose fairly high for people who have chronic UTIs, like at least a half to a teaspoon
up to two or three times a day. The limiting factor might be it has a bit of a laxative effect. You could get a little gassy or have some loose stool at the highest doses. But what it does, what D-mannose does, is it prevents the adherence of E. coli bacteria to the walls of the bladder and to the lining of the ureters, and potentially also within the collecting ducts in the kidneys, thus preventing infections. And it is, it's a sugar, but it's a non-nutritive sugar, so it won't make you fat. And it's pretty helpful. It's some of my patients who have really bad bladder problems, like patients with MS, they can't properly empty their bladder, they get chronic infections. Taking D-mannose is a wonderful prophylactic. It means, you know, it doesn't just mean a condom. It means something that's preventive against infection. So not quite sure what the situation is with your sister, but she sounds like she's reaching the end of the line in terms of, you know, nutrients. I mean, one other thing that you can take, but it's limited because you can't take it forever. The herb Uva-ursi can be helpful, but I don't suggest that patients take it for more than a month because long-term use of Uva-ursi can be harmful to the liver. So there you have it. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what else we could do here. Older women also respond to estrogen sometimes using vaginal estrogen or using a product called the S-ring. Kind of rejuvenates that area, and you know, without estrogen, the area is a little more susceptible to infection. But it's a tough, sounds like a tough situation. I'm not quite sure how to break through that. Thanks for your call. And
thank you, Doctor.
My pleasure. So let's talk about sauna bathing. Of course, this comes to us from, where else? The University of Eastern Finland, where they do a lot of saunaing. And it's cold up there, so saunas are popular. And sometimes they rush out of the sauna and jump into a pile of snow. Maybe they get a little bit of a thrashing with some beach branches. That's kind of a typical night out in Finland, along with a little bit of Jägermeister. Frequent sauna bathing reduces the risk of elevated blood pressure, according to an extensive follow-up population-based study. The risk of developing elevated blood pressure was nearly 50% lower among men who had a sauna 4 to 7 times per week compared to men who had a sauna only once a week. Okay, so I will say one thing about this is that correlation isn't necessarily causation. If you are extremely debilitated and if you already have high blood pressure, probably taking a sauna is a bridge too far, because elevating your body temperature to a very high degree might put excessive strain in your heart. And, oh, by the way, many blood pressure medications impair your ability to sweat and change your body's thermostat. So it's easy to develop hyperthermia in a sauna if you're on some of these drugs. So is this correlation? Because healthy people can take a lot of saunas, and folks with high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, maybe not. But it's thought-provoking, because I notice that when I take a sauna, or sometimes I take a steam, I'll walk in there, you know, just wearing a towel, but I keep my pulse meter on. And my pulse meter indicates that I go from a resting pulse that might be 55 or 60, sometimes up to a pretty nice high pulse rate, 70, 80, 90, at the very highest levels of endurance of the heat. And so it's a little bit of a cardiovascular workout. It certainly changes the way that your blood circulates, because in an effort to cool the body, you dilate your blood vessels near the surface. And this may increase your endothelial responsiveness. In other words, your stiff arteries may become more supple, more flexible in relationship to the heat challenges. So there is something to this. Moreover, a recent analysis of the same study also revealed that those taking a sauna frequently had a lower risk of pulmonary diseases. So it's good for your lungs. And here's a suggestion. If you get a cold, instead of going for a workout, you know, kind of working out when you have a cold, kind of miserable, or a cough, go take a steam bath or take a sauna. It'll be helpful for your lungs. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our number, 877-726-8255. Great hour, lots of calls. Let's keep it up an hour or two. This is Intelligent Medicine.